Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's ein Rhythmus, als gäb's ein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hello and welcome to Gegenpressing, the Bundesliga podcast from the Football Grad Network. My name is Manuel Feit and I'm once again joined by Stefan Biankowski. Stefan, how's it going?
It's going very well. I'm just out of watching Dune, the new Dune movie. So if I start rambling about spices or sandworms or House of Atreides or anything like that, then I can only apologize to the listeners. My mind is elsewhere.
Just don't give away the ending. I mean, I've seen it already, but maybe some of our listeners haven't. I realized that apparently I watched it super early, getting to see it in September in Munich, which was like a very early release for Germany. So yeah. I've been doing my best not giving things away, including to my wife, who still needs to watch the movie. So yeah, we'll try to keep sandworms out of this as much as possible. But, you know, speaking of comebacks, of old classics, and we have to talk about Wolfsburg hiring their new manager. And we recorded the show last week. And just as we did record, Van Bommel did get fired. I think, you know, going back a little bit to that story, it's not really surprising when you look at Wolfsburg's results, the way it played out. I wrote in my article for Forbes, you know, Van Bommel averaged 1.15 points per game for Wolfsburg. Didn't win a game in 8 games after winning the first 4 in the Bundesliga. Then you add the fact that he had a historic defeat to an Austrian Bundesliga team, the first one by a German team in the Champions League to an Austrian team, right? And then the fact that they also bowed out of the DFB Pokal in the most controversial fashion possible. I think by and large, it was a consequential decision. And I remember saying at the time, you know, Jörg Schmadtke was one of the most ruthless, but also best sporting directors in the Bundesliga, or what we call them in German managers, right? We're both saying that he probably had someone in mind already. And it didn't take long and they announced Florian Kohfeldt, the former Werder Bremen head coach, as the new head coach at Wolfsburg. And reports suggested that they already were talking to Kohfeldt the day after the Salzburg game, right? So it's not really surprising that it went that quick. But looking at that hire, that was one of the names we didn't speculate with. Granted, we didn't know very much because it came so out of the blue, right, in so many ways. But, Kevin, what do you make of that hire?
Yeah, it's a really interesting one. I guess the thing for me that kind of stood out was obviously, you know, even though he had a decent run at Werder Bremen, he still is, by and large, a very inexperienced head coach. He's only 39. You know, he's only played, you know, a number of seasons in the Bundesliga. And I think a lot of people would probably still say the jury's still out on whether he is a bona fide good Bundesliga head coach. I know there's a lot of people that think he's a very good coach. There are some people who aren't as convinced. I don't really have a foot in either camp. I'm just waiting to see what he can do at a bigger club. You know, we said on the podcast last week, or the thing I kind of stood out to me was that this Wolfsburg team or this Wolfsburg side have so much talent in it. It's a top four side. It should be a top four side. And it's just interesting that they've gone for a more inexperienced coach. And maybe not inexperienced in the sense he knows his way around the Bundesliga, but certainly inexperienced in coaching a team of this size, coaching a club with certain expectations. But then I guess on the other side, because Wolfsburg don't have top-tier ambitions or top-tier expectations, i.e. they're not expected to challenge for the league title, they're not really expected to pick up German Cups, at least since Kevin De Bruyne left. So, you know, in a way, they're actually the perfect club to experiment and take chances on young managers because, you know, if he ends up finishing 11th or 12th this season, then, you know, Wolfsburg won't be too happy, but it's also not really the end of the world. Maybe they might have a few star players who start grumbling and want to move on, but they're not a club that have to really worry about getting relegated, but they're also not a club that really have to get into the top four to kind of keep things ticking along. Although I guess it depends on how much Volkswagen they're willing to underwrite the losses season to season. So I think in a way, it's a risky move, but then I guess Wolfsburg are in a unique situation where they can take risks. I think that's probably where I fall down on this. And it'll be interesting to see how Kofeld does with this team, what he can do with them, because I do think he's probably more tactically, he's happy to kind of bend his rules. He's happy to kind of be more pragmatic with his tactics than maybe Van Bommel was, who to me seemed like a coach who struggled to have like a plan B more often than not. I think that kind of showed very quickly at Wolfsburg. So, yeah, I'm really intrigued to see how it works out. I think it is a risky appointment, but, you know, nothing risk, nothing gained, I suppose.
Yeah, I would fall in probably in that camp as well. I mean, I was a huge critic of Kofeld during his time at Werder Bremen. I thought that they probably went separate ways a season too late, you know, when they did finally sack him in May with just one game to go and then brought back Thomas Schaaf in an attempt to rescue Bremen from relegation. I remember thinking at the time that that was probably a year too late. They should have probably gone separate ways the year before, because I remember spending some time with Bremen and at Werder Bremen, because, you know, Transfermarkt office is very close. It's in Hamburg, right? And it is less than an hour's train journey to Bremen. And a lot of people that I work with are either Hamburg or Bremen fans. So it's a club that, you know, I follow closely because of that. And I always thought that Kofeld, I thought when he first came in, he obviously kind of restored that club and like some of the playing philosophy that Bremen always stood for. This was a club that always played very attractive football, right? Growing up in the 90s and in the early 2000s, and of course under Thomas Schaaf, when they brought in die Raute, the diamond, and won quite a few titles as well. Won the German championship, won the cup, always went pretty deep in the Champions League as well. And there was a sense that he maybe could restore some of this. But I felt that after the opponents figured out Kofeld's plan A, he really struggled to come up with plan B tactically. And that's always where I thought, like, well, where is he going to be able to adjust tactically to some of these challenges that we're facing? It seemed like every day that he was in the job, his opponents had an easier time to figure out what he was going to do. And that is, I think, for me the very big question mark when it comes to this appointment for Wolfsburg, because we know he's going to come in. They won their first game against Leverkusen, you know, a Leverkusen side that has struggled ever since they got smashed by Bayern. He's come in with his 3-4-2-1 formation, which is something that he also liked to play at Bremen towards the end. It was his preferred formation for a long time. And then, of course, it's also actually a formation that worked quite well under Glasner at Wolfsburg. But here's the big question for me, Stefan, and this is probably where Wolfsburg's gamble lies. It's a gamble, right? Because has he learned from his mistakes at Bremen? And he's, as you said, he's only 39, right? Maybe he did, but and he's from that area of the world. He probably understands the size of a club like Wolfsburg. But for me, I think the big one will be, how long will it take opponents to figure out his tactics? And can he adjust? That's a big one for me.
Yeah, exactly. And this is kind of what I was saying about whether, you know, why it's a risk. The risk is that he's never really had to work with certain players. You know, league leading players, if you want to put it, they have some of the best strikers in the league, they have some of the best defenders in the league, they have some of the best midfielders in the league, and wide players. So he's going to have to evolve his management of the game so that he can get the best out of those players, rather than put together a Bremen team that has to maybe try and work better as a team to make sure they can overcome teams that are better than them every week. He's going to have to put together a Wolfsburg team that know how to beat lesser sides who will be defensive against them. But I think if I was a Wolfsburg fan, I'd be kind of excited by the fact that they've gone for, you know, someone young and exciting like this rather than maybe a tired old hand. And if you look at the Bundesliga table, the teams that Wolfsburg would probably be challenging for those kind of fifth, sixth, seventh place positions, maybe even fourth, most of them are also in a kind of tricky transition period. You know, Frankfurt near the bottom of the table, Hertha Berlin are near them, Gladbach, okay, they've, you know, they're beating Bochum right now and they've just got a good result against Bayern, but they're certainly not out of the woods yet in terms of their form. RB Leipzig, we talk every week about whether Marsh is going to lose his job. You know, and sure, there's, if you actually look at the table right now, it's Freiburg, Leverkusen, Mainz, and Union Berlin. And I'm not entirely sure those four teams are going to go the distance either this season. So there's a lot up for grabs this season in the Bundesliga. So, you know, Wolfsburg have plenty to play for. They've got one of the best squads in the league. And they're still only, what, 1 point off fourth place after a pretty poor start that led to their head coach getting sacked. So, you know, they could certainly be in a worse position. And I think Cofield comes in and, you know, he's got a lot to work with there.
Yeah, I mean, the assessment of the league is, it's an interesting one right now, because you're right, Wolfsburg on 16, Leverkusen on fourth with 17. I guess Wolfsburg kind of dragged them down to their level. And then Mainz and Union Berlin are kind of sandwiched between those two clubs. Leipzig on 15, I mean, they're even still within a shout of a Champions League spot. We're now on that magic match day 10, right? Where we can look at the table and say, like, okay, well, it's crystallizing out what the standings could look like. And I think, I personally think that fourth and potentially third are completely up to grabs this year. Because Freiburg will have to, you know, they've done well. 22 points out of 10 games. I mean, technically speaking, they're just one win from first place. But how long is that form going to last, right? I mean, they would be the first to admit that their goal is that magic 40 points first. You know, no team ever got relegated with 40 points. And then see what the rest of the season can hold. And oftentimes you see teams, they reach the 40 points and then they kind of fall off a little bit. And so I don't think they're gonna be lasting in that top four, as much as I would love them to, but I don't see it. So there's two places up to grabs, and I think Wolfsburg are definitely within a shout of that. I think what really does crystallize itself all this right now as well, I think the top two, Stefan, and we have to talk about the team that is still only 1 point behind Bayern Munich, despite all the stuff that's been going on, despite Haaland being out injured, possibly until the new year, despite that very poor performance against Ajax. They did get through in the DFB Pokal, which wasn't also the most convincing performance either, right? But they're still only 1 point behind Bayern Munich. And you have the sense, we're going to talk in great lengths about Bayern Munich later in this podcast. So I'm saying, you have the sense that right now for them, it really is, for Borussia Dortmund, is really just about hanging on to that 1 point gap, because the game on the weekend, it was not pretty. I know that that was the game that you focused on. So walk us through that.
Yeah. Oh God. This was a remarkable match in so many different ways. I honestly thought Dortmund were terrible in this game. Absolutely dreadful. And it wasn't even because Erling Haaland was out injured, because there have been games where Haaland has been up front and okay, maybe he's been, you know, half fit or not fully fit, and he hasn't really looked like his old self up front. But without Haaland in this team, I just feel like, just in general, the team, they were so passive. And I think it just kind of struck me that they were playing, it's almost as if they didn't have respect for Klon, in the sense that they were kind of passing around the ball. There was no intensity to them. It felt like a preseason friendly. And it was just waiting for Klon to kind of just grab the game by the scruff of the neck and cause an upset. And they almost did when Utz scored a goal, which was pulled back because he hadn't balled it. You know, Anthony Modesta did what he does best in kind of bullying Dortmund central defenders. And it did feel like a game in which Klose would score a quick early goal and then Dortmund would pull it back, maybe end up grabbing a draw, but that's useless because they then lose 2 points in the title race. But then it just kind of seemed to work. The first goal was the most bizarre. After about maybe, when was the first goal? It was 40th minute. After 40 minutes of Dortmund doing very little in the final third, Kobel just thumped the ball up the park. And of all people, Julian Brandt headed the ball down like some seasoned target man. He headed the ball down to Jude Bellingham, who then stuck in a wonderful kind of chipped cross for Torgan Hazard to head in. So, you know, just to kind of, if that doesn't kind of illustrate how irregular this match was, the first goal came about from a header from a goal kick from Julian Brandt, and then, you know, Torgan Hazard heading the ball into the back of the net. And then the second goal from Tiggers, who's, of course, he's more of a kind of traditional target man. He scores from the corner, a kind of front post glancing header. And if I'm not mistaken, I mean, I guess you can technically count a headed goal as a shot on target. But if you want to be a little more specific and use literal shots, I don't think Dortmund had had an actual shot on target up until that second goal. So I think that kind of sums up how things were just kind of falling apart for them. But they did get the two goals and they won the game. They got the 3 points. And you know what? Maybe there's something to be, if you're a Dortmund fan, maybe there's a kind of weird kind of thing to be optimistic about there, where this isn't the first time this season where they've been absolutely dreadful, but they've just managed to somehow win the game. And I find that's very un-Dortmund-like, because in my experience, I've watched so many Dortmund teams who can pass through teams, who can score goals for fun, but they always end up shooting themselves in the neck or shooting themselves in the back at the worst moments. And this is almost the opposite of that. They really struggle throughout the match, but then they somehow manage to win the game. And I think that's maybe it's possibly a good omen for a title race this season. I'd much rather see Dortmund do that every week rather than outplay teams and drop points like they have done in previous seasons under other managers. So in a way, Dortmund fans can be happy, but I just thought the performance in the whole was dreadful.
8-21 shots, Stefan, in favor of Köln. That's quite a stat. I mean, that takes some doing to be a top side like Borussia Dortmund and being outshot like that, but then still end up winning the game. I think where I'm worried is that they seem to grind out results against teams like Köln and get those points that in the past they would have dropped. Mm. And I mean, that does speak for the character in the team. And, you know, you have someone like Jude Bellingham, who is in brilliant form and has in many ways replaced the assist and goal output that Jadon Sancho has left behind, right? So, I mean, a totally different player, totally different position, but yet, you know, they've been excellent finding those points, the score points on the field regardless, and doing it all without Erling Haaland. And I think maybe being without Erling Haaland for a while might do them some good if they still get the results, because it can get them adjusted to life without Erling Haaland, which will be eventually happening anyways. But it also gives you some tactical flexibility, right? You did the match. The one game that I always go back to was the one against Ajax, where they lost 5-0 and 4-0, and were completely played off the park by a team that basically tactically figured them out. So I think maybe this forces Rose and the entire team to learn to be tactically more flexible and also make it harder for opponents to adjust to this Dortmund side. And yeah, I think it's a learning process. And for me right now, the most important part is they have to keep that gap to Bayern Munich as close as possible, because once Haaland does come back, right, in the spring, and it is still only 1 point, then everything can happen in the second half of the season, right?
Yeah. And this is what happens in the Bundesliga, isn't it? Bayern have this innate ability to just kind of grind out results in the first half of the season, and then after the winter break, it's already done and dusted, and Dortmund are already preparing for next season. And it's all about just keeping a hold of Bayern until Christmas, and then that's when the belief begins to kind of seep into the Dortmund players, because they're still there. Add to the fact that they could be pushing for a German Cup trophy when Bayern are already out of it. It galvanizes them, doesn't it? And there's certainly a lot of work to be done here. I mean, I think the other interesting thing is I think this is the first Bundesliga clean sheet of the season for Dortmund. You know, they've conceded 15 goals in the first 10 games of the season, which is just dreadful. I mean, Bayern aren't much better. They've conceded 10 out of 10 themselves. So it's not as if they're doing remarkably well on the defensive front and Dortmund aren't. Both teams look like they have holes in their back line. But Dortmund in particular just look... They're really struggling. And you know, I don't know where this team would be if Gobel hadn't joined the club, if I'm being perfectly honest with you. You know, if we were still kind of looking at a team that had other goalkeepers in from the past, you know, and there's been a kind of long history of kind of substandard goalkeeping at Dortmund, does seem to me like almost Gobel has kind of come in and he made two huge saves off the top of my head against Cologne. Modesta had a volley in the box in the second half, I believe it was, and then I can't remember who it was, which Cologne player, but he basically took a shot from the halfway line. Gobel had to do some really great acrobatics to kind of make sure he didn't score. And that seems to be happening every game I watch Dortmund. So God knows what would happen if he picked up an injury. But the players in front of him, Akanji, Hummels, Pogragic, these guys just, something just isn't clicking. I would maybe suggest it's got something to do with the fullbacks. Without Guerrero on the left, you know, I mean, you know, Meunier, we all know what he's good at. He can go forward, he can create chances, but he leaves huge gaps in defence. And I also think, despite Jude Bellingham being very good going forward, I think they still lack a really proper defence midfielder. I'm still not convinced by Axel Witsel as a top-class kind of holding a defensive midfielder. So I think those are the really key areas. If Dortmund can just hold on to Bayern until Christmas and then they can maybe try and shore up those positions, then, you know, I still think we'll have a title race on the cards, but... those are the things that I'd be worried about. It's not even really Erling Haaland that worries me. It's that defensive line that really bothers me more, to be honest.
Yeah, 100%. I think the big one for me is that, and this has been something I feel like I've discussed for years, that Dortmund needed a good goalkeeper, someone who can win them games. And I guess that was probably the one thing that did it address the best over the summer and brought in a goalkeeper who can literally save them games and add... you know, what Neuer does for Bayern, right? Add a few points every season. And I think Kobel is doing that right now. And so, you know, I remember having that discussion with the guys from Goal Impact, and they were saying the goalkeeper position is where you can spend the least amount of money and get the most amount of points out of it. It's the best investment that you can make as a club. And this is where Dortmund need to invest the most. Or invest the right way. And they did. I mean, they signed a fantastic goalkeeper in Kobel, and he's been securing them points. And I think that could make a difference. But you already mentioned the Pokal. Dortmund are still in the Pokal. As is my club, 1860 Munich, holding up the flag for Munich, because in absolutely shocking fashion. And I think it's... provided German football with a lot of hope, this result, in that you can beat them, and you can not only just beat them, if you play them right, you can destroy them. Borussia Mönchengladbach 5, Bayern Munich 0, biggest defeat for Bayern Munich in 43 years. You know, it's 1978, they lost 7-1 to Fortuna Düsseldorf in the league. I think this is a result. I don't think anyone saw it coming. If you say you saw it coming, I think people maybe expected, okay, maybe Gladbach can knock out Bayern, because Gladbach is sort of Bayern's bogey team. But 5-0, I don't think anyone saw it coming, but it was the way it was done and the way that Gladbach's attackers in particular challenged Bayern's defensive line, Upamecano struggling throughout the entire game. I think that in some ways provided a blueprint, didn't it, Stefan, in terms of this is how you play against Bayern Munich. If you want to beat them, this is how you do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Gladbach put together a fantastic blueprint in how, if you really can get your press perfect and you can put Bayern under a huge amount of pressure within their own half, then you can really cause a huge amount of problems. You know, and it's not even just in terms of the defenders. I mean, I'm pretty sure one of the goals came about from Kingsley Coman losing the ball in the middle of the pitch. it just comes from putting a huge, intense amount of pressure on them. And Gladbach did that tremendously. I think they did that to kind of keep Bayern at bay, but it also put a huge amount of players under pressure. As you kind of alluded to there, I thought Upamecano had another dreadful performance. We're kind of seeing this kind of a trend beginning to develop here with him at Bayern already, when he struggles against really not even physical strikers, but quick strikers. Strikers are happy to take him on. We saw it with Thuram in the earlier Gladbach game in the start of the season. We saw it with Kostic in a defeat to Frankfurt ahead of the international break. And then we obviously saw it against Mbolo in this 5-0 defeat. And I do wonder if Gladbach, and I wonder if other managers are beginning to look at his Bayern team and say, we just need to stick the big guy on Upamecano. We need to get him the ball. We have to get him running at him. And that's how we can get at them. And it's not a surprise, I think, that he was dropped for the match against at the weekend against Union Berlin. So, it shows how you can beat Bayern. It's a shame that it was... I mean, I guess it's a shame it wasn't a shame it was in the Pokal. It would have made things more interesting if it was in the Bundesliga, perhaps. But I think tactically... I mean, I do also wonder if a lot of this comes down to the fact that Nagelsmann was obviously... He's been having to isolate through COVID. Even the win over Union Berlin at the weekend did not look perfectly well structured. It didn't look like a good... It seems silly to say that because they won 5-2, I think it was. Mm-hmm. So, technically they won comfortably, but it looked like a very kind of... I mean, you maybe would say better. It didn't strike me as a very tactically... astute performance from Bayern. And I do wonder, even though head coaches nowadays say they have very little influence when the game actually starts, but it did feel as though, because Nagelsmann wasn't on the sidelines there screaming like he does, Bayern just kind of looked quite shaky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would go along with that. I thought actually that Union looked at that game, the Gladbach game, and said, okay, we're going to stick Adoyini up there and Becker. And we're just going to go at their defensive line. And Upamecano didn't start the game. He actually provided probably one of the biggest highlights of the game when he did come on, winning the ball in his own half, storming forward, dribbling through all of Union's defense, and then passing it on to Müller, and Müller curling it home to make it 5-2. And that looks like a decisive result. But that 5-2 was literally that ended the game, right? Because even when it was 4-2, Union still looked like they were very much in that game. It's because they just kept going toe-and-toe against them. And maybe, Union, they're not the flashiest, most talented team in this league. So I thought it was interesting that they tried the Gladbach approach anyways, because it could have worked, right? I mean, you play a bit better defensively and you win that game. And I think they looked at that Gladbach game and said, yeah, we're going to stick the two big guys up front, because it wasn't just Upamecano who struggled in the Gladbach game, it was Hernandez as well, who just avoided going to jail, right? And I think that probably played a big role in that match as well. But I thought it was really interesting that seems to be the thing now. You put two big physical guys up front who are very fast and can sort of turn around this Bayern defense and the Bayern defenders and match them with speed, and you put them in a lot of trouble. So I think Union, the 5-2 looked more comfortable than it was from watching it back. Bayern Munich kind of scored themselves out of trouble, if that makes sense. Right. But I think another opponent, they will be looking at this. And I think if Bundesliga coaches around the league, a lot of them are very qualified, they will look at this and say, Can we mirror this? Do we have the players to do this? And I think they will just put the players on the field. And, this goes back a few years. I was at the game when Adi Hütter was in charge and they beat Eintracht Frankfurt side, beat Bayern Munich 5-1. I remember Friedhelm Funkel putting Luke Bakio up front as a striker to sort of counter that high press. This isn't new. If you have the right players, you can play them that way. And I think it really comes down to having the guts to do it and then sticking with it. And after you going up two goals, to not stop. Because that's what Gladbach did. They did not stop. It was relentless at times, right? And then people are saying, okay, well, that was a bad defeat. But I actually think the 5-0 was that, the 5-0 Gladbach result flattered Bayern. It could have been way worse. Yeah, it could have been 6, 7, 8, and I think we're not quite. It'd be interesting to see how this develops over the next few weeks and how other opponents look at this result and see if they can do this and if this could change maybe the Bundesliga title race in some ways. Another thing that I actually find really interesting, Stefan, and here's, I want to hear your opinion about this, because I floated this on Twitter and I've gotten some positive feedback. I've gotten a lot of negative feedback, including one guy saying to me that the Bundesliga is already a laughing stock. Let's don't turn it into MLS. I thought it was a little disrespectful, but sure, well, if you think so. But playoffs, you know, to decide the title, and there's many different playoff formats out there. I know in Scotland and in Austria, they split the league table into two, and then they have a championship and a relegation round. And in the process, you halve the points that you had in the regular season, right? I'd be open to that. But I also kind of think playoffs are great, because I looked at the DFB Pokal winners, and yes, Bayern Munich won 10 out of the last 20, but not in a row. And there's 2 years where they didn't win it. And I think that would be exactly the kind of, you know, that'd be kind of excitement that you need in the Bundesliga. And, you know, football fans are very traditional. You and I know this. But before we went on the show, you brought up Formula One and how Formula One turned around the product as an entertainment product by essentially changing the rules. So why would football be any different than, let's say, Formula One, Stefan?
Yeah, it's interesting, because I think there are only so many levers that the Bundesliga can pull to try and, you know, make the league more interesting to neutral fans without, you know, upsetting what is a very kind of traditional German football culture, which fans, you know, understandably are very passionate about. And I do think German football's number one asset is the fans. So you don't really want to upset that. But I think when it comes to competition structures and, you know, how games play out and how teams end up playing each other over the course of the season, I don't actually think that's as sacrosanct. I don't think it's is something that's as, you know, holy or whatever you want to call it, as, you know, other aspects of German football. For example, 50+1. There are certain things I think in German football you just don't touch. That's fine. But I don't think really like how many times you play the same club every season, or, you know, how the league's structured, or how many teams in the league, etc. I don't think that's something that's really, you know, chiseled in stone, because, to be honest, German football compared to a lot of other nations hasn't had professional football for as long. You know, we're talking about the Bundesliga, it's only been around for about 50 or 60 years technically, compared to, you know, Italy, England, Spain, etc., etc. So it's not as if we're talking about something that's centuries old here and something that has never changed. It has changed over the years. And I think, you know, it's interesting when you look at, I mean, I'm not a huge Formula One fan, and I'm one of those fans who kind of got on board when I started watching it on Netflix. But what intrigues me is that they've obviously went to huge lengths to kind of change the rules, to change the formatting, to make things more interesting. And I think there probably are certain things that Bundesliga could do to try and take an edge off of Bayern's dominance. You know, whether it's about tweaking the TV deal, whether it is about completely changing how the structure of the league itself. I mean, I think in Scotland we call it the split, and what that basically means is after two rounds, I think, of the Bundesliga, so we play each team home and away, the league then splits up, and I don't even know if it is two rounds, actually, it's more than that because there's fewer teams in the division, but basically around about two-thirds of the way into the season, they go into a split where top six sides play each other and then the bottom six sides play each other, and you basically have a championship round and a relegation round. And it is more or less one of the best things about the league, to be perfectly honest with you. The only issue with it in Scotland is because we have so few clubs, it means certain clubs play each other maybe four or five times in a single league season. And that's not very interesting, to be perfectly honest with you. Fans get bored of playing the same teams over and over again, but that's a unique Scottish problem because we don't have as many clubs. I think you could do something in a full league like the Bundesliga, and it wouldn't lead to the kind of repetition issues that you would get in Scotland or maybe in Austria. And it would mean that a club like Bayern, to win the league title, would have to play the top six or seven teams, which I think would be really interesting. I think it would add an element that is quite like the Pokal, where one-off games against a Gladbach or against a Leverkusen or against a Dortmund, perhaps, really can go on to be quite important, you know? And I think it's not a foolproof plan. I'm not sure if it would make a huge difference, but it's little things like that that would shake things up, make it more interesting, and possibly, take some of the shine off of Bayern's dominance. Now, Bayern fans might say, "Hey, look, what the hell are you talking about? It's not up to the it's not up to the Bundesliga to try and bend the rules to stop us winning league titles." But actually,
it is
because at the end of the day, the Bundesliga has to be competitive in terms of a marketing point of view and in terms of a in terms of an entertainment point of view. And I don't think changing the rules to make it harder for one team to win the league takes away any of the important cultural parts of German football. I don't think it makes any difference to those things. So I don't know. I think there's a lot that the Bundesliga could learn from Formula One. I don't actually follow him, but Jacob Feldman, did a really good tweet thread on this on his Twitter account. It's just Jacob Feldman 4, and he did a whole thread on what the and just basically on how what Formula One did to change things because it was in huge trouble 5 years ago. TV audiences had shrunk by a half, shrunk to a half of what it had been before, like 10 years before that. So they obviously had to do something really drastic. Now, I'm not saying the Bundesliga has to worry about being that drastic. I don't think German football is really at risk of losing interest. But if you want to kind of do things to gain more interest and maybe, like I said, to kind of make some slight structural changes to kind of stop one single team from dominating, I think you could do a lot to make it more interesting.
Yeah, I'm 100% on board with you on that because in real life, when a company becomes too big, competition rules come in and they split that company up, right? It happens all the time. I'm not saying anything as drastic as splitting up Bayern Munich, you know, turn them into two clubs or something like that to make the league more interesting. But it is, as a governing body of the Bundesliga, it is up to the Bundesliga to decide how the league is being more competitive. And if Bayern's dominance is hurting the league as a product, it is, you know, because every member of the DFL, the governing body of the Bundesliga, is a shareholder. And there's 36 shareholders in, because it's the first and the second division, isn't it? And every one of those shareholders has an equal right. And if one of the shareholders is hurting the other 35 shareholders by being dominant and hurting the product that they're trying to sell abroad, then it is in the best interest of the majority of the shareholders to change the way it operates to ensure that there is a better competition and that the product is better so that everyone can make more money. Mm-hmm. And I think we're getting to that point now, right? And it's not Bayern's fault that they're good. And I'm not saying they should get any worse, but there should be an avenue towards other teams being able to catch up, which would then increase the competition of the league overall and enhance the product and also make German football better overall. This is really what it comes down to. It's like if you increase the product, it will actually in the long term also benefit Bayern. Like it's in Bayern's interest that this league is interesting, right? Mm. Because they can sell more shirts abroad and it's more interesting to watch. And I think we're getting to the point now where something does have to change, and whether it is splitting the league or that goes straight to playoffs, top eight qualify for the playoffs, it's single knockout competition. And I think that would actually bring quite a lot of change in too, because you see it with the Pokal. Bayern will probably still win 50% of the titles, but 50% of the titles is a lot less than 100%, right? Mm. And that makes the league a lot more interesting. And all of a sudden you're like Hoffenheim, you finish eighth, you have like three good games and you win the German championship. And people say like, oh, how is that going to change things? It changes things dramatically because the winner of the league gets a lot more money than the team that finishes eighth. Right, and like and another mechanism that I would bring in is that the team that the newly promoted team to the Bundesliga should just get as much television money as the winner, right? Because then you're spreading the wealth around a little bit more. And there's lots of things that you can do. And I mean, I'd be curious to hear some of the people responding to me, you know, when we put this on Twitter, and maybe you can respond to it and give us our thoughts. But a league isn't sacrosanct. And, you know, one of the comments I got is like, it's supposed to be a league. It's like, yeah, but it's also the National Hockey League or Major League Soccer or National Football League. A league doesn't mean it's like a table of 18 teams. In the end, the team with the most points win. There's lots of leagues around the world where they have leagues in the actual name and they still have playoffs. You know, yeah. A league can be all, or the Champions League, you know, a league can be all sort of things. So
yeah,
I think there's lots of things you can do to make it more competitive without hurting the biggest team in the league and actually helping the league overall. And I think it'd be an interesting, like, you know, a conversation starter. So if you listen to this podcast and you have some ideas, some thoughts and some criticism, why don't you just respond to the tweet that we put out and we can have a little bit of a discussion on it, because I'd be curious to hear what other people have to think. But I think we both agree, Stefan, that my final point maybe is that we are at a point now where we can change two things. We could get rid of 50+1, or we could change the structure of the league. Mm-hmm. And I know what German fans would rather change.
Yeah.
You know?
And I think that's the kind of thing that, like we've said, like these kind of structural changes to the competition itself are things that the league can play around with without impacting on the fan culture. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the terraces and what happens there and the stuff that really does a great job of promoting German football around the league. It doesn't really jeopardize any of that.
Yeah, you can preserve the fan culture without, you know, I think that's a better way. And I think it's probably a better sale to the fans. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, but give us our feedback. Give feedback, please. And I think we'll be back next week, Stefan. Once again, great to hear your voice and looking forward to another exciting week of football.
Absolutely. I can't wait.
All right, guys. Until next week, auf Wiedersehen.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.